Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the right corner, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And I am progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
What corner are you in, Garland?
I'm in the left corner.
Okay, just checking. You're listening to the most disruptive radio show in America. It's time for Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, Garland and I will take on the media. The title of today's show is No, American Media, You Are the Propaganda. And we will be explaining exactly why Americans can get the truth on this here Russian radio station. I told you it was provocative. In round two, the Democrats, always provocative, are realizing that perhaps just opposing Trump might not going to be getting them quite elected in 2018. So they're proposing actual economic policy. I think it's going to be horrible, but we'll discuss it in round two. And in round three, Kushner speaks. What? Jared Kushner actually did a public appearance today, something you rarely see from him. We'll be talking about that in round three, and we'll have lots more, including, hopefully, your comments on social media. It's all up next on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Hey, Garland, how are you? Nice weekend?
Yeah, pretty apparently nice. I forgot what corner I'm in. I don't even know if I'm in any corner at all, but yes. I'm here. How's that?
That's right. See, they keep trying to push Garland out of the left corner. I got to point out that the goal of some of the Democrats, because, see, Garland doesn't fit in. You a big Hillary fan, Garland?
Not exactly. Not many people are going to say that.
Hey, by the way,
if I go out of the left corner, it'll be to the lefter corner.
By the way, before we get rolling, let's just mention that you can catch us. If you don't catch us live, you can catch us on iTunes. Go over there, subscribe, rate, and review. You can You can also catch us on Spreaker. You can also catch us the next day on SputnikNews.com or listen to us live there. And of course, if you're inside the Beltway, you can listen to us. Oh, man. My mouth's not working, Garland.
Monday,
you can listen to us. Monday. It's Monday, yeah. 105.5 FM. Let me try it again. 105.5 FM.
That's the Casey Kasem voice that I recognize.
Home of the bluegrass. Oops. Here inside the Beltway. Don't worry. We got blocks of bluegrass coming right up. You're here for the bluegrass. Just keep listening to the show. I'm sure we're going to get to it any second now. I'm trying to trick the people who are actually trying to listen to the bluegrass.
Let's hope it works.
See, because 105.5.
They've got to listen because they ain't got a whole lot of bluegrass options in D.C. unless they go online.
Here's what they have. They have all the bluegrass options in the world, just not on the radio because, you know, market competition, I guess, is what happened. There's not that many listeners. See, 105.5 used to be a bluegrass station, and one of the interesting attacks on Sputnik, it was an interesting attack. When we started going terrestrial a couple of weeks ago, some of the local news outlets, you know, the usual thing is, you know, annex the Crimea. That's where usually they start, you know, they start with something like that or Cold War stuff. The new attack was the Russians have gotten rid of bluegrass.
They killed bluegrass. Oh, I love the way it was written. It was like, have taken over a bluegrass station. You know, and you could just kind of see like a building with the words bluegrass 105.5 on it and like some helicopters coming in with guys rappelling down, you know, some ropes in camouflage going in and taking over the station. That's the way it looked from the articles that I saw.
So we're going to start in round one by taking on the dopey U.S. media. I got to say something about this. Here's the way this came up. So I came in this morning for the show prep meeting and, you know, we had the usual, hey, how was your weekend? And my weekend, as most of my weekends are, involved a lot of research and news stuff because I'm here to work, right? And so I do research all weekend and we are constantly up. And by we, I mean both Garland and I. And again, Garland and I are two guys who aren't voting for the same people. Like, I'm a Trump supporter. He's a Bernie supporter. That's our shtick. But that shtick is based on the fact that I'm a Trump supporter and he's a Bernie supporter. Right? And so, but I got to tell you, the take, you know, if you hear Sputnik mentioned or if you hear RT mentioned, who's the other sort of sister cousin station related to Sputnik, it's you hear the term propaganda, the Russian propaganda outlets. And we were talking about this a little bit. The real propaganda, and I'm gonna go off on it. I say this all the time, but we wanted to do this segment to start the week with this. The American media is in fact the propaganda. And the reason I say this, and we'll get more into detail about this, but I've been researching this Ukraine story for weeks and weeks. The story of Ukrainian interference in the election. It's 100% provable. It's 100% true. I've now gotten it, Garland, where I think I can do it standing on one foot. Not right. that I'm going to, because that would embarrass everybody. But here's the story of Ukrainian interference. It's real straightforward. A DNC operative got together with Ukrainian officials. The government of the Ukraine in August put out a story about Paul Manafort saying he was in the secret ledger. That had a clear impact on the election. Later, they retracted that story. And this is all provable through things like emails from that Democratic operative to the DNC. How's that? Is that a pretty good short summary?
It's pretty good. The Ukraine, you know, the funny thing about it is that story is clear. You know, there are many allegations about, you know, kind of about the whole Russia-Trump collusion thing, right? There's all these allegations, okay, Trump worked with the foreign government.
And we'll talk about those in round three, by the way.
With the Ukrainian story, there's no allegations. It is very, very clear that Alexandra Chalupa, who was contracted with the DNC, worked in the Ukrainian embassy, worked with the people from the Ukrainian embassy.
It's That's clear. Right.
These are not allegations. These are have been admitted. There's been stories about them. People aren't saying it didn't happen.
Well, and there's an email that was released by WikiLeaks where Alexander Chalupa writes to the communications director of the DNC, Luis Rivera. And this, don't forget, this was released. Now, so what happened was we've been talking about this in the show for months. Sean Hannity started talking about it a couple weeks ago. He was relating it to the Don Jr. meeting with the Russian lawyer story. We never did that because we were talking about it before that story ever came out.
Yeah, just independently. Well, the other thing about it is this, and that is, and this is where actually Sputnik comes into the mix.
Yes.
Because there was a former editor here, and, you know, I don't know if you've been reading, probably not much about it, a former editor by the name of Bill Moran, who wrote an article. The bottom line was he wrote an article. There was an error in it about a comment that was made. 20 minutes after he made the after he wrote the article, he recognized it. He took it down. And President Trump made an attack on Hillary where he referenced that article. Meanwhile, over at Newsweek, referenced that comment. Meanwhile, over at Newsweek, Kurt Eichenwald writes an article where he basically says, well, the only way that Trump could have known that is to collude with the Russians. So he creates this big, another twisted, dubious scenario.
Can we call it for what it is? It's a BS conspiracy theory.
Exactly.
And by BS, I want to say it means bogus stuff, obviously.
And if you doubt whether it's bogus or not, it ended up with the guy who worked for Sputnik, Bill Moran, filing a lawsuit against Newsweek that was settled the other day. We don't know whether or not Eichenwald is still working for Newsweek after that settlement, but we do know that he has taken it down from his bio that he works for Newsweek.
Right. In other words, if you look at his Twitter biography.
Right.
Kurt Eichenwald, who's been one of the chief proponents, and by proponents, I mean nutcases, one of the chief people driving this narrative. It no longer says he works for Newsweek because Bill Moran, who used to work for Sputnik, sued him. And here's the thing. Bill can't talk about the terms of the settlement, but I will say we saw him Friday and he was smiling.
Yeah.
I think we can say that, right?
He was smiling. We did see him and he was smiling. He didn't say anything about the lawsuit, but he was smiling.
He didn't say anything about the lawsuit. He just was grinning.
And see, here's the problem I have because, Lee started off talking about this whole thing. You know, it started during the primaries and it's gone on this whole fake news thing, which has turned into, to me, what it's turned into a lot of this whole idea of fake news has turned into mainstream media using that term to attack people. Not just mainstream media, just people using that term to attack stories they don't like, attack a website that is not establishment media website. They're using it at the White House now to try to keep from letting some of the lesser known news sites into the mix so they can get access. It has become a tool of the establishment to say fake news when the fact of the matter
well,
is...
Well, and it's become a... But right. the right-wing pushed back, and so they started calling the New York Times fake right, news yeah. and everything. And here's the
Which
thing.
Which I think was a mistake.
I think it was a mistake, too.
Because you bought into the scenario that you could call anybody fake news.
I kind of think it was a mistake. Here's the problem. Breitbart News, I'll use two extremes, Breitbart News and New York Times. They both report accurate things. They both also sometimes report inaccurate things. Does that make sense?
Right.
In other words, you can't name a news site that only reports accurate things.
Name one that's never had a retraction.
Never had a story wrong. You can't name one, right? Now, the difference is, and the reason I'm saying it's propaganda, I'm saying the American media is propaganda. By the way, we should also mention you can watch the show on Facebook Live.
Right.
So if you're not watching it, or I'm on Periscope. You can find that under Twitter on my name, Stranahan, at Stranahan on Twitter, or Garland Nixon, at Garland Nixon is there. So I'm going to point to the camera on Periscope. I'm assuming the American media is watching. You American media, your propaganda. And the reason I say that is because what does propaganda do, Garland? What propaganda does is it tries to promote. Well, here's one thing. When we talk about propaganda, it reminds me of cults, like religious cults. Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things religious cults try to do is they try to keep you from listening to anyone outside the cult. Does
right.
that make sense? They want to control the flow of information.
Kind of like when CNN, the CNN commentator during the WikiLeaks, during the WikiLeaks release said, you shouldn't to the people, to the viewers. You shouldn't read the WikiLeaks releases. In fact, it could be a crime. You could go to jail if you read them. You should listen to us and let us tell you what's in them.
Yeah.
From the people who gave us the Iraq War, the people who told us that Hillary was going to win in a landslide. Listen to them. How could they? Have they ever gotten it wrong before?
I was talking to someone on Twitter before we went on the air, and they were saying, well, I don't have time to read every news source. You don't need to read every news source. But I'm going to give you a hint. Ready? Here's a hint. If you read two news sources about a story, read ones that have an opposite narrative. Does that make sense?
Yep.
In other words, read a Fox story and a CNN story. Read a Breitbart story and a New York Times story. If you're a Breitbart reader, make sure you read. In fact, I did this, Garland, because I have citizen journalism school. And we had the weekend challenges. So my weekend challenge for people last week was don't absorb any of the media you normally absorb. Only listen to the media you never listen to. I said, if you listen to CNN normally, only listen to Fox. If you listen to Fox normally, only listen to CNN. And the reason I did that, imagine doing that for a weekend, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying people should do that full time, but try it for a weekend. Just try it.
Yeah, yeah.
Try listening to different media and see the worldview that the opposite media,
you know,
is putting out.
Thomas Frank, the guy who I've talked to, a very, very bright guy. He wrote a book called What's the Matter with Kansas? He wrote another one called Listen Liberal, where he prophetically, you know, kind of told the Democratic Party where they were going wrong and how they were losing touch with the working class. Right.
Yeah.
And he wrote an article recently. It's in The Guardian. It's called The Media's War on Trump is Destined to Fail. Why Can't It See That? And I would recommend that to anyone on either side of the aisle, if you're a Republican or a Democrat, because he goes into explain, you know, that the mainstream media is just attacking Trump all the time and why it's not going to work. And, you know, the thing that I said many times during the primary is, you know, to the media is you got to realize it's you the people hate, not Trump. They may not like Trump, but they really despise and distrust you. But it's a great article. And one of the things that he talks about, one of the problems that he talks about with the mainstream media, and you know this, you go to the Times, you go to the Post, you go to MSNBC, you go to CNN, he says, and the thing about it is, that it's homogenous, that they agree. You know what I mean? There's certain premises. I refer to the AP as the approved premise. There's
right,
certain
right.
premises. And you know that you can go through all of the media, all of these outlets, and they're all going to agree on certain things. So it doesn't matter on which one. And that's why what happens is after a while, people don't pay attention to them. The only people that watch them, you know, the funny thing is now, as far as MSNBC, you know, I used to watch it every day. Oh, I loved it. It was on my, and now here's what I found. You know, the only people left that watch MSNBC all the time, the ones that voted for Hillary. That's a fact. The people I know that weren't Hillary supporters, you know, on the left, the Bernie people, the Jill Stein people, the people who just couldn't stomach Hillary, or even some people who, there are a lot of people who reluctantly voted for Hillary for one reason or another, right? They're for the most part, they don't like MSNBC or CNN, can't watch it because all you get all the time is Russia, Russia, Russia. And believe it or not, as we will talk about later on with an economic platform that I have my issues with, what they don't get in the mainstream media is that people aren't stupid, that people really do want information.
Well, here's the problem. So in our lifetime, because Garland and I are both in our 50s, in our lifetime, literally, you know, when we were growing up, there were four or five networks. That was it. ABC, NBC, CBS, PBS, right? A couple channels up on the UHF, which we pointed out last week. My son doesn't even know what that is.
Right.
My kids don't even know. Thank God my kids have been raised in an area where they don't know the difference between UHF and
VHF. Rabbit ears, that term doesn't ring a bell with.
That's right, yeah. So, rabbit ears. Do you know what rabbit ears are, Jack? No, he's annoying. He thinks they're rabbit ears.
Ears are a rabbit. Why wouldn't they be?
Sure. So, it's an antenna. See, it used to come, TV used to come through the air, not through a cable. I know it's weird, but anyway. So the point is, sort of like on your phone, I know it's confusing, but the point is in our lifetime, we've seen it go from five networks to 20 networks on cable to 500 networks on cable to a zillion networks, right? In other words, not just networks, but like, do you get your news from ABC, NBC, CBS? Then it was CNN, right? Then it was Fox. Then it was MSNBC. But then it became YouTube, this YouTube channel, this guy's Twitter, this guy's Periscope. Yeah. That lady's Periscope, right? A zillion things. I didn't want to leave the ladies out, Garland.
And you got to add this. But then you go to, now you go to Fox, CNN, or MSNBC. For the most part, with a few deviations, but for the most part, you turn it on in the evening and you get four different people and you pretty much get the same story from four different, vaguely four different perspectives. I can tell you MSNBC, my goodness, from Chris, what's his name, to Lawrence O'Donnell, to, you know, to Rachel, you're pretty much going to get the same story, and it's going to be Russia Trump.
Yes, and here's the other thing, you know, I say this all the time, listen very closely to what they're not telling you. In other words, story selection is the basic thing. It's the most basic thing in news. Do I choose to cover this story or that story? And listen carefully to what they're not telling you. Listen to what they're omitting, and you'll learn a lot. Agreed?
Agreed, absolutely. And the other part is, you know, right now with this Kurt Eichenwald thing, there is no argument too dubious that they won't accept it and run with it.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that later. In round two, we'll talk about the Democrats' new economic deal. All that and more coming up on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. Democrats take aim at big business and drug prices in a new economic campaign, according to Yolande Mui on CNBC.com. So Chuck Schumer's rolling out the new economic plan. He's all over the place talking about it. And a couple of things. So Lee, I don't know, you're probably not going to like it from the right. I'm going to start by attacking this thing from the left, by going at it from the left. And I do mean attack. So it's not the economic plan in itself, as sketchy as it may be, that I have a problem. Let's start with this. It starts off by saying, in hopes of winning over President Donald Trump's populist base. So once again, the Democratic Party is doing what they do, and that is ignore progressives, ignore the left. Let's not forget, this is a party that said, oh, we lost. It was the Bernie bros' fault. They didn't support Hillary enough. They didn't vote for Hillary enough, even though that wasn't true. But they argued. So if they're going to argue that they lost because of the Bernie people and the Jill people, that they need those people, then wouldn't it only stand to reason that they would go after those people if they're going to argue they lost because those people, shouldn't they go after them? No, they're going to do what they always do. Imagine that when's the last time who you saw a Republican come out and say, now you could argue that Trump based on the way he made policy arguments did it. But when's the last time you heard a Republican come out and say, my plan is to get Democrats to vote for me? No, Donald Trump went for the base. People go for the base. They ignore
well,
their
I am
going
to argue with that, by the way.
No, I would argue that he made arguments that would, he felt, would attract Democrats. But he didn't just come out and say, he fed red meat to the base. They give zero to the base. Do you think they're saying anything about unions? No. About student loans, little bit about student loans. But I'll end by saying this. The last year when Hillary was running, and they thought she was going to win, Chuck Schumer told MSNBC about his top priority. You know what it was? Some kind of international tax reform tied to a large infrastructure problem. The main thing he wanted to do was tax cuts for corporations. That was it. Of all of the things that his base wanted when Hillary was running. And you know what he said? He said that this is something that Clinton and Paul Ryan support. Of course, Paul Ryan's going to support tax cuts for corporations. And you come out now and here's your big plan with some complicated stuff that most people aren't even going to understand. And of course, tax cuts for corporations. The Democrats aren't winning anything in 2018. They're getting nothing. Lee.
Well, so first off, because I want to get into some of the details in the Democrats' economic plan that they've announced. But you're right. I mean, look. Strategically, they did this because Schumer acknowledged this in his comment about, like, you can't, if you lose an election, you can't blame someone else. Remember that?
When you lose to somebody who has 40% popularity, you don't blame other things. Comey, Russia, you blame yourself. Well, they ain't really abiding by that too well, are they? They're still, like, blaming Russia for everything.
But let me disagree with some of the stuff you're saying here, though. Trump did not go after the base. Well, but before I get into that, though, let me ask a more philosophical question. Who's the base? Who's the base?
The conservative base, the traditional Republican base. Yeah, I would argue he did. He would with the wall. There were some things that he did that a lot of people considered that's red meat to the base. And Mexico is going to pay for
yes,
it, things of
yes
that nature.
And no.
So he did.
Yes and no. Lots of Republicans have got elected. I'm going to name some major Republicans: Marco Rubio, John McCain, Lindsey Graham. These are all people who are very pro-immigration reform, for instance. George Bush, right after 9/11, made a speech, Islam is peace, right? Islam is peace. Remember that? So what I'm saying—
He tried to do an immigration bill. You remember that? And it got blown up in Congress.
They were kind of going to— Yeah, they tried to do an immigration bill, but it was a— Here's what I'm saying. Let me just define it here. It's been very clear to me in the time that I've been on the right, which is about 5, 7, 6 years ago, where I've been solidly Republican. It was clear to me immediately that there's a split on the right between the establishment Republicans and, I'm not going to call them the real Republicans, although they like to call themselves that. They like to call the establishment Republicans rhinos, but I'll call it the more populist Republicans. Now, Donald Trump actually, in my opinion, identified a new base. And that's why in places like Michigan and Pennsylvania, he realized that there is a populist base. And he latched onto that. He didn't even latch onto it. It was in the air. I could see it in the air. I could see it in Breitbart.
Too.
Right. And he happened to be the spokesman for it. So when you say something like immigration has gotten out of control, that appeals to a lot of Americans. It does not just appeal to Republicans. It appeals to a lot of working class people. It appeals to, and I'll tell you who else it appeals to. It appeals to a lot of Black Americans. It appeals to a lot of inner city Black Americans who see, for instance, in a place like Philadelphia, and I know this because I've interviewed a Black construction union guy up there, who knows that things like the unions in Philadelphia were basically initially a way to protect white people getting the jobs. Then what happened is then the cheap foreign immigrant labor came in. And so now if you're a Black construction worker or you want to get into the construction trades, which has traditionally been a good, well-paying working class job, it's very, very hard to do. And so there was a lot of anger. Now, again, I'm not saying everybody and I'm not saying, but I'm saying that this was real, that a lot of working class Americans were like, you know what? My grandparents were immigrants. I don't have any problem with immigration per se, but this has gotten nuts. Or they looked at crime and they go, you know, this has gotten nuts. I'm in favor of criminal justice reform, but, you know, when I look at some of these cases, the Michael Brown case, the hands up, don't shoot thing, and it turns out that that didn't happen, like, what's going on? Then they burn down a city. A lot of people, not just Republicans, sensed that something was really out of balance. And I think that's what the base is. Now, that being said, I think that's why Trump won. Now, on the specifics of this, well, again, we'll talk about it. But here's what's interesting. I'm just going to note something before I throw it back to you. I was scanning, if you're watching us, by the way, on Facebook Live or on my Periscope, Stranahan at Twitter. While you were talking, I was looking at the Post, Washington Post, and the New York Times. Here's what's interesting. Here's how the Democrats have hosed themselves with this Russia narrative. They want to propose this economic plan. You know what? I'm looking at the Times and the Post right now. I can't find anything about the economic plan.
Right.
Do you know why? Kushner, Russia. It's pushed. So in other words, by pushing this, the Democrats have created a media monster that they can no longer control because these networks have realized what's more interesting to the American people.
And here's what they realize, what gives them better ratings, because that's what they care about first and foremost. So a couple of things. My opinion is, and I think that the Democrats would be smart to recognize this. Here's the reason I think. If you think about it, Trump, like, he won Michigan, he won Ohio, he won Florida. Very, very, very close numbers, right? So here's what I think the difference is. Number one, I mean, real close numbers, but he won, right?
Yeah.
Here's what I think threw him over the edge. A lot of the stuff, you know, people have priorities, you know, and so a lot of the stuff I would agree or disagree with you. But here's one thing that's hard to overlook. The most unpopular issue during the primaries and the general election was trade deals, NAFTA, the TPP.
It was the most
unpopular amongst voters.
Yes.
Now, what's going on?
TPP especially.
Right. Both the left was crazy about it. The right was working class people said, we're going to get the shaft.
Right. That's
because
exactly
they understood what happened the first go around with all these trade deals. Okay. So what happened? While the Trump was saying, this is bad, right? The Democrats, and here's where I got to get to, you know, Barack Obama, I got to criticize you where it's due. Barack Obama was trying to push the TPP through, and Tom Perez and these other guys, they were so arrogant and they were so sure that Hillary was going to win that they were pushing through the most unpopular policy on both sides of the aisle. So Trump won by a 3,000 votes in Michigan, in Wisconsin, in Florida. You're not going to tell me that if these fools hadn't recognized that TPP was so unpopular and backed off that couldn't, I'm not saying it would or wouldn't, but that couldn't have made a difference in those votes. So the bottom line, the arrogance of the Democratic Party, once again, to say, you know what, we're so sure we're going to win, we'll go along with the corporations on this one. Now, of course, my opinion is Trump was false, that Trump is reneging on a lot of those promises, but at least he had enough sense to read the tea leaves and to realize that it was a losing move to champion trade deals.
Well, I got to say, I'll just say this. It's too early to say how the Trump administration is going to go. We've seen mixed signals in some areas, but the first thing he did was get rid of TPP, et cetera. On that one, for instance, that was clear. And I think it's a Greek phrase that says basically you can't judge someone's life till it's over. I tend to agree with that. It's very hard to judge someone's life. Trump has been in 6 months. He's done some stuff I agree with, mostly stuff I agree with, some stuff I don't agree with, but it's easy to go, the sky is falling. Even the Syria shooting missiles into Syria, I didn't agree with that, but it didn't escalate the way it could have. And it turned out to be, in a sense, much ado about nothing. And that was one of the big areas that I disagreed with. Jeff Sessions, for instance, pushing this anti-marijuana thing that he's doing. not going over well with the Trump base, not going over well with the Trump base. Now,
well, the rest of the country, if you look at the number, you know what I mean? Like 57% of the people or something. People just don't. America doesn't believe that that's something that we need to be chasing right now. People have bigger fish to fry.
You know, here's what it is. I was talking to my son today, my older son, Shane. And he said he read an interesting definition of maturity recently. Maturity is the ability to get a stimulus and wait on your response. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
In other words, when you're a little kid, right, if you can't have something right now, you throw a fit. I know this because I have little kids, too. I got a five-year-old, and if he wants to go to a restaurant, and you're like, we'll do that in a half hour, he just loses it, right? And I got a seven-year-old, and he loses it less. I got a 16-year-old. He completely loses it, but that's another. No, he doesn't. He's wonderful. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And as you get older, you're able to go, you know what? Now let's.
And that's all. I would add this. And that's very important about understanding politics.
Yes.
All I say with Trump is I disagree with the policies. Look, bottom line is right now, if I were President Lee, you could honestly say there's a whole lot of Cohen's policies that I firmly disagree with. You'd have to wait till the end to see how things. But you could say, Garland's way over there on the left. I don't agree with a lot of stuff he's good. So I can say that. But I'm going to wait and see how it works. I can simply say that these aren't the policies. But I'm not going to go nuts every other day, every time somebody says, Trump's second brother, cousin, second removed on his uncle's side, had Russian dressing and a shot of vodka. Holy moly, we've got collusion proven this time.
And we talked about the propaganda aspect of the media in the first round
here's the thing. The other thing about this whole Russian thing, and I think the Democratic economic platform also comes back to this, that why. And I think it's critical. People may think I talk about it too much, but it's critical. Here's why. Because you have a big part of the real fight in the Democratic Party is about two things. Number one, why did Hillary Clinton lose? Why did the Democrats lose? And it's not just about Hillary Clinton losing. It's about why did the Democrats in the last 8 years lose the House, the Senate, the White House, 13 governorships, 900 state legislatures. You know what I'm saying? Why? If you ignore your base, if you don't do it, you've got to get your base out there. And I still don't think the Democratic Party sees the old working class that they had before as their base. I think the Democratic Party sees their billionaire donors as their base, and they're not going to do anything to offend the billionaire donors, but there ain't enough of them to get you in office.
Well, so the Democrats have pitched this better deal agenda. So let's just talk about a couple points on it. So the Democrats have this new thing they're calling a better deal.
Better ingredients, better pizza.
Sort of like the New Deal, but better.
But better.
So they want a couple things they want to focus on. Job training. They want a $15 an hour minimum wage. I'm going to take both of these and then get your take. First off, the job training thing is interesting because I was in the White House a few weeks ago when they announced a new apprenticeship program that they were going to be doing. I was in a private briefing for it, so which means I got to ask a question about expanding apprenticeships. I'm in favor of that. If the Democrats actually want to work with Republicans on that, I think there's a lot of stuff that can be done about job training and apprenticeships. And like I say, in things like construction, for instance, that's a great place for apprenticeships. Now, on the $15 an hour minimum wage, I don't want to debate the merits of the issue for a second. Let me just explain why I think it's not going to happen for the Democrats. Because number one, they don't control things. And number two, we're seeing the $15 an hour minimum wage be implemented in cities, mostly liberal cities like Seattle, San Francisco. And I think we're going to see the economic impact of that. In other words,
they're going to be better off.
Well, but here's the point. We'll have that data by the time 2018 rolls around. Yeah. Does that make sense? I'm saying is politically, they're not going to get it before 2018. And by 2018, and by the way, I think there's data coming out that shows it happens. I don't want to get into the weeds on it. I'm just saying, we'll have some data on it.
And the other thing is, I think part of that is, you know, the progressive base. Okay, let's go with that. But because they have been so separated from the progressive base, I think it's not enough. And here's the other problem. So on their top agenda items, they've got greater scrutiny of corporate mergers, tougher standards that incorporate consumer privacy, product quality, and impact on wages.
By the way, corporate mergers, I'm fine with that. I'm a Republican.
You know, the thing about it is you're getting into wonky administrative stuff. Trust me.
Right, yes.
The people who are hurting in Michigan ain't going to be roused by that. You know, people are like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? My job went to China. Hey, well, guess what? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to have greater scrutiny of corporate mergers. The guy's going to be like, huh? I can't pay my electric bill. I need a job. You know what I mean? It's been that sounds like this wonky, elitist, out of touch stuff that you read in the New York Times. But it's not anything that you can say to the people in Michigan and Pennsylvania. It's not something that they can sink their teeth into and say, OK, that's going to make my life better. And that's what the Democrats aren't getting, that they got to simplify this thing. But
well,
then
here's what needs to be acknowledged. You talk about the base. The Democrat base is the unions. In other words, the SEIU. AFL-CIO. Right. This is their base. I'm not saying union members. I'm saying union officials.
Has been their base in the past.
Well, it has been in the past, but here's the problem. The unions have been successful in getting stuff like a 40-hour work week, right? And here's where the unions hosed themselves. They spent years giving up wage increases for benefit increases. Remember that?
Yep.
Then Obamacare comes along and wipe those Cadillac plans we talked about. That's what the unions had negotiated. In other words, if you were a worker, the union said, hey, don't worry about your wages. We're going to get you good benefits. Then Obamacare comes along and wipes out the good benefits that the unions had negotiated.
Well,
for
I
you.
Don't think so.
But well, here's no,
what,
did.
Here's
I mean,
the, here's the issue with unions. You know what? It comes back to this. The union leaders supported the Democrats. The union members voted for Trump. You know why?
Right.
NAFTA. He said your mom, NAFTA, CAFTA, TPP. Again, it comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah, agreed.
All right. Well, we'll be back. In round three, we got big things to talk about. We got all kinds of fun stuff going on. So do not change your dial away from 105.5 FM. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
Round three, and Jared Kushner is speaking. Ponder that. Jared Kushner, the presidential son-in-law and top advisor, has actually spoken out. Let's just go over. I'm just going to read you the top three headlines right now in the Washington Post so you get a sense of how the establishment media is covering this. Kushner details Russia meetings, denies collusion. That's one. Kushner's I did not collude statement parsed. That's the one that makes me want to kick someone from the Washington Post, because it's like, yeah, hi, let me explain this to you. And the people who read the Washington Post are like, yeah, awesome. Just explain it to me because you guys have been doing such a good job. Third headline. These are all the top headlines. The fix. Why Kushner is a central piece of the Trump-Russia puzzle. Those are the top headlines on the Washington Post. Let's go over to the New York Times, shall we? New York Times. I did not collude, Kushner says, after meeting with Senate investigators. There's one story. Also up top, read Jared Kushner's prepared remarks. There's another one. Then there's more. I mean, literally, then there's two stories about Russia sanctions.
You mean there's none about the Democrats' new economic plan?
Yeah.
Oh, what a shock.
Yes.
And I'm sure Chuck Schumer's happy to know that they've been successful with their to push the Russia narrative so successful that you'll never read anything that the Democrats are doing about anything, any plans, good, bad or indifferent in any of the mainstream news. They can't get past Russia. Good work, guys. Who's your PR specialist?
I was close friends with a guy named Brad Carvey. Brad's Dana Carvey's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Dana Carvey, Saturday Night Live, Wayne's World. You've heard of him. And Dana once was talking about how the tabloids work. And what he said is people like the National Enquirer, that sort of tabloids. He said, here's the way they work. Because I noticed that Dana had never been in the tabloids, really. And I'm like, well, why? Aside from the fact that he's been married to the same woman for like 30 or 40 years or something. But he said, here's the way the tabloids work. This is insight on this. He said, the way the tabloids work are, it's like something you sign up for. So they help you at a certain point in your career. He said, but the deal you make is if things go bad, they're going to attack you.
Faustian deal, as they say.
So if you're Kim Kardashian or Paris Hilton or someone like that, they'll give you lots of promotion week after week. Kim's new diet plan, right? Whatever. Kim's new outfit.
Kim's new baby.
But then if Kim is caught having an affair, boom.
You're done.
This is exactly, the reason I mention that is this is how the regular media works. Hey, Democrats, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave, right? In other words, you pushed this Russia narrative. Hillary Clinton pushed it during the election. After the election, you were pushing it. You were pushing it. You were pushing it. And now, when you want to get your agenda out,
they can't get around it.
All they want to talk about is Russia.
And when I look at this Kushner thing, right, I looked at it and I'm like, I did not collude. That's a story. I did not. You know what I mean? I mean, that's basically what they have. It's like, okay, Kushner's out. What do you have? What do you have to say, Kushner? I didn't collude. Okay, you know, and now you've got like five words, and you're writing. They're all writing nonstop on that. And this is how bad it's gotten now. Now there are a bunch of stories out that Jill Stein has gotten into the loop.
Jill Stein?
Jill Stein, yes. So apparently the...
Wait, explain who Jill Stein is.
Most people won't even know who she is.
Yeah,
she ran for the Green Party and got a few votes. Okay. So Jill Stein runs as a Green Party.
Former presidential candidate.
Former presidential candidate. You know, you've got the Jill Steins. What's the other guy's name? Rocky Johnson. Right,
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson, Rocky. See, there we go. You know, there's a few people.
By the way, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson were fantastic in the debates. Oh, that's right. They weren't allowed to debate.
You know, well, interesting you say that because actually they did. You know where the
I know,
third
but
party
you know
debate,
what I'm well, saying.
Debate was? It was on RT. And you know what?
Right.
When the document that was came out, I believe, in December or January that said that, you know, RT was part of Putin's plan to influence the election. Part of the evidence was that they aired. This was part of the evidence. This is one of the evil ways that the Russians were trying to take over and interfere with our elections. They hosted a third. They hosted a third party debate. Boy, there's no way better to destroy democracy than that. But at any rate,
my theory in the debates, by the way, is if you have a chance of winning, in other words, if you are on the ballot in enough states, which is not easy to do. You can't just roll out of bed and do it. If you're on the ballot in enough states where theoretically you could win.
Right.
And that's a high threshold, by the way. That's not a low threshold. You should be in the debates, period. But this whole thing is about control. And it just shows you that the Democrats and the Republicans.
Yeah, it's about two party. Ultimately, there are still a lot of the Hillary people are mad at Jill Stein. Because here's the bottom line, they cleared the road for Hillary in the primaries, and because she wouldn't clear the road, she wouldn't get out of the way. And they said, "How selfish of her to run in a democracy where you or I could run if we wanted to. We could run as right, and Mickey Mouse can run." You know, Harambe the gorilla got 11,000 votes. But at any rate, so now the
admittedly, he was fantastic on the stump.
Yeah, you are right. So the Senate Judiciary Committee now is asking Jill Stein for all. Listen to this. They're asking President Trump's son Donald Trump and a number of others for all of their communications, and they're including Jill Stein's name. And it's because she went to an RT event in Moscow and she took a picture or something, and like Putin was in the room at the table or something like that. And what the Green Party spokesman is saying, they're calling the inclusion of her name vengeance against Dr. Stein for running as a third party candidate for the White House. And there are a lot of people on the left that feel that also, that there's still people in the mainstream party who are mad at Jill Stein because she had the unmitigated gall to run to do something that this democracy allows her to do. If you feel like you can win, if you feel like you're the best candidate, why should everybody have to get out of the way for you?
But can I say something about the fact that RT hosted a third party debate? I just want you to think about this. If RT hosted the debate, do you know what that means to me?
What?
That nobody, let's go over it. If you're a third party, if you're the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, who would you rather have hosted the debate?
CNN, Fox, MSNBC.
CNN, Fox, MSNBC. Let's keep going. How about Country Music Channel?
Right. Yeah, there we go. Anybody.
How about MTV? You'd rather have that? I literally mean this. RT would be towards the bottom. It might be the Weather Channel would be higher.
They got a lot more viewers.
I'm just saying. Do you see what I'm saying? The fact that it was on RT shows you how locked out. That's why I said in round one, this is propaganda. Because the fact is, I said there's 600 channels, but they're owned by like six or seven companies. Period. That's it.
And you know, the other thing, it's like, you know, I always refer to the AP as the approved premise. It's like this. We know that the people who have all the power don't want people to hear other options. They don't want to hear a libertarian. They don't want to hear the Green Party. They don't want to hear people say, look, what the mainstream people are telling you may be wrong or may be flawed, and they're going to lock them out. So much so that they attack a channel that has the unmitigated gall to run them. But what did Kushner say? Here's interesting. Jared Kushner said, all of my actions were proper and occurred in the normal course of events of a very unique campaign. I did not collude with Russians, nor did I know, do I know of anyone in the campaign who did, which is just expectable. And then he goes on, I mean, you expect him to say it. Then he goes on to say, President Trump won the election because he had a better message and ran a smarter campaign than Hillary Clinton, not because he had help from Russia, suggesting otherwise ridicules those who voted for him. And again, that last sentence, ridicules those who voted for him. I would argue this. It suggests that you don't understand why those who voted for him and why those who stayed home or as in Michigan. Did you know this, Lee? In Michigan, Hillary lost by like 12,000 votes, right? There were 57,000 people in Michigan who voted but didn't vote, choose a presidential campaign, and you lost by 12. It says to me that you don't understand them and you have no respect for the fact that people are going to make a choice, that it's not handed to a Hillary Clinton or anyone else. And that just because people are in the Democratic Party does not mean that they will vote for the Democrat anymore, or the same with the Republican Party. I would argue this. If it had been Jeb Bush versus Hillary Clinton, there'd have been like one of them would have won 1-0. Whoever had the most kids would have won, because if Jeb Bush was there, do you think any Republicans would have showed up to vote for him?
Well, that's the thing that Trump did. This is one of the reasons I say I am a Trump supporter of the guy who ran. And when he deviates from what he was running on, I don't agree with that. By the way, I think that that's just common sense. I really do. In other words, I was I voted for Obama in 2008. And once he started deviating, which was immediately, because don't forget, Obama was against the individual mandate for healthcare as a candidate. As soon as he got in, here's my theory on what happens, Garland. This is my big conspiratorial theory.
Rahm Emanuel? Bleh.
Well, here's my big conspiratorial theory. Once you become president, suddenly the establishment has a problem. So Barack Obama ran as a political outsider, a political newcomer. I think this was his strength. I think this is the reason a guy named Barack Hussein Obama could get elected post 9/11.
Which is the same reason that Donald Trump won.
That's what I'm saying.
They both ran as anti-politics politicians.
There's this joke, Bill Hicks, the late comedian, has a joke. He said, I have a theory that when you become president, they take you into a room and they say, we'd like to show you something. And the curtains all go down and a screen pops out of the ceiling and they show you film of the Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. And they say, any questions?
Exactly.
That's Bill Hicks' theory. But it's a joke because I don't think people are threatened, I think here's what happens. When people get elected president, the establishment, especially if they're controllable like Hillary Clinton or Jeb Bush, let's use those two as an example. They don't have much, their work's cut out for them. Does that make sense? Okay, well, we're going to tell them what to do. That's easy. Now, if they're different, Obama, Trump, what happens is the establishment people, as soon as you mentioned him, as soon as Rahm Emanuel came into the Obama administration,
I was down the toilet,
right,
in my opinion.
And as soon as Gary Cohn and Dina Powell came into the Trump administration, it was like,
you got a neocon in there. You know what I mean?
Those are both red alert moments to me.
Yep.
Does that make sense? In other words, hey, these are people who are outside the establishment.
You know what that is? That's the establishment saying, we got to get a foothold in early.
That's
before
right.
this thing goes in the wrong direction. I remember Barack Obama saying, yeah, you know, if some unions were, if they were out picketing, I'd get me some comfortable shoes and I'd picket with them. Right. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Union, that's a good base. You're pitching to the unions, smart stuff. And then there was the whole Wisconsin thing and the unions were unhappy and they were calling and Rahm Emanuel was there. They weren't answering the phone. You well, said that you would do stand up for the unions. And as soon as the unions called, you're like, oh, I don't think that's going to work right now. Never mind. And I had that was a moment when I said, well, you said you were going to do something and people supported you. That ain't right.
And again, I don't think that it's I don't think they get threatened because a lot of people are like, well, gee, he was blackmailed. Oh, they threatened him. And again, the Bill Hicks
joke
I mentioned.
It's much more nuanced than that. I think this is what we're
I don't even think it's that nuanced. I think it's like, hey, look, you know, you got elected, but now we got to play ball. There's political realities. You need to go along.
You
got to
be a realist now.
You got to be a realist now. Hey, you know, the health insurance industry, look, you were talking a good game against them in the campaign. And by the way, this would apply to both Barack Obama and Donald Trump. But hey, you know, you were talking a good game against them. But these guys are ready to write you a big check. These guys are ready. The people in the pharmaceutical industry, come on. And you know, look, at the end of the day, Pfizer, these guys in the pharmaceutical industry, these guys in the health insurance industry, they're not bad guys. Let's sit down. And by the way,
And you know the other thing?
I'm sure they're not bad guys. I'm sure they're great dinner companions.
That's the other thing. They donate to both sides.
That's exactly right.
They give so much money. Cory Booker is awash in money from the pharmacy industry. So what we end up is they donate to both sides. But I think if we get back to this Kushner thing, which we started off about, I think the big thing I see here, two things, and that is number one, that there's no real meat to this, but I have people who have been friends on Facebook for a long time who are like Hillary supporters who I totally disagree with. And what I found is some of them, they're running around like their hair is on fire. All you have to say is anyone related to Trump and the word Russia, and then they are positive that this is the final, you know, piece of the puzzle. That this is going to show, this is what he's going down on. And it's gotten to the point where over and over and over, it's Kushner. Oh, Jill Stein, her name's in it. Oh, well, we should have known that would be the final piece of the puzzle.
And well, see, this is what happens.
They run that till 2018. You know what they're going to do, don't you? They're going to lose.
Well, when I say it's propaganda, I brought up in the first segment that I relate this to cults, because I really do.
Yeah, I agree.
One of the ways, here's another way cults brain. Okay, here's the thing. You have to understand something about cults. Cults are based on solid science. Let me explain. We know a lot about human psychology now. There have been decades of solid research in the way psychology works and experiments that have been done on people about power relationships, about people's willingness. You know, there's the famous experiment where one person is supposed to give an electric shock to the other person.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So we've had decades of research. This goes back to the 40s and 50s on this. So cults are based on a lot of solid research about the way to influence people. One of the ways you influence people is via repetition.
Yep.
Right? Another way is you block out things. Another way, because a lot of these cults, and by the way, not all cults are, when people think of cults, they think of hardcore ones like Scientology, the Hare Krishnas, but there's also such a thing, look this up, as such as audience cults or client cults. Client cults are one where you sign up, you join. Audience cults are ones where you sort of watch. You're not
well, you
even
know what? I think you just hit something here with you sign up and join, because when you say you sign up and join, what I see with a lot of people who, like I said, I've been friends with for years of this, there's a confirmation bias cult.
Yes,
they
that's exactly
already
right.
They loved Hillary so much that they were totally deflated when she lost, right? And so they disagree with Trump's policy, so they're already furious at Donald Trump. So now when you say to them he was involved in fill in the blank, they're ready to, you know what I mean? So
well,
now
you
the
can
media
get
can say to them he was involved in this, and it doesn't matter what it is or how dubious or how, you know, inarticulate the argument is, all you got to do is say, see that guy that you hate over there? Yeah, he was involved in this. You're distracted by it.
If you have convinced somebody that they should get out in the street with a pink knitted hat on and hold up a sign with Trump and Putin tongue kissing, which I saw, by the way, at the Women's March.
I saw them too.
I saw those signs, right? if you've convinced them to do that, like you got your pink hat on, you're holding up the Trump and the gay porn, basically, shall we say, with Trump and Putin, you're holding that up. How hard is it going to be to get you to go, hey, by the way, you're completely wrong on that. Oh, oops, sorry.
And you know what? They call the Bernie people over here. They call us. They say, you guys are ridiculous pie-in-the-sky fantasy people. And the Bernie people are saying, what about health care? What about jobs? What about college loans? The Bernie people are like, and I use that term because everybody knows what that means, are like, let's talk about policy, right? And we're crazy because we're talking about policy, but the people that are running around every day screaming everything, no matter what it is, ties Trump to Putin, they're the sensible ones, but the people are saying, let's talk about policy, we're nuts. And finally, Chuck Schumer, after 7-8 months after the election, finally he thinks, hey, I got an idea. Let's come up with an economic policy.
Well, you're not going to like this because I'm going to bag on the leftist. But I got to tell you, one of the cult techniques that I see at every freaking leftist freak fest that I go to, I've been to a lot of protests, is the drums. The drums.
I love the drums. Drums are good, man.
No, let me explain why the drums are bad. The drums are designed so you can't freaking think. I know what they're there for. There's a reason the Hare Krishnas back, you don't see them as much anymore. I'm showing my age. But the reasons, the beating and the chanting and all of that stuff, it's a form of repetition. And the drums, I'm telling you, the reason, if you look it up, it is designed to create cult-like, the reason for the chants, the reason for the human microphone during Occupy Wall Street, for instance. Mic check. I'm going to repeat. Whatever this guy tells me. That's what happens.
Well, sometimes a drum is just a drum. Sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, and sometimes a drum is just a drum.
Don't tell that to Bill Clinton.
It doesn't have that deep a meaning.
I don't know why you're bringing up the cigar thing as a...
It was Freudian, not the same segment. I'm being Freudian, not Clintonian.
Anyway, we will be back to you tomorrow with the least propaganda show in America, the show that makes you smarter every single day. You've been listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.